This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is Danuta Kosciuszko, poet, translator, editor, and biochemist, just by the way, with everything else. But today she is poet. So Danuta, please give us a poem.
Lilac, lilacs. A big branch of lilac. Lilac. Like once along the village road. The carriage wheels through the sand. Yellow splashes of warblers whirl through the fragrance. Lilac smells like lilac. May in cold, warm days. Evenings not willing to sleep. Simmering desires. And then the verses sound better than any before. I can't open my eyes to write them down, so I repeat them over and over and slip into another dream. I'm gliding through the air of music toward luminous mountains. I see myself as Chagall's figure, long hair floating parallel to my long dress. An orchestra plays Elgar's in the south, and for the whole time I am there, and the mountains, and the light. Then a phone rings, and I wake up to answer, but the phone does not ring. The birds sing into my room. I come down and can't find that poem, but the lilac, lilacs.
That is the voice of Danuta Kosciuszko. So we're in for a treat today. That takes me right to Poland. Really, I just felt I was right there. That is the power of poetry. Danuta, where are you from?
I was born in Lublin, which is on the east south. But then when I was 1 year old, the family moved to Warsaw. So I've lived in Warsaw for many, many years.
But the magic of poetry is that you brought that with you and you have dedicated your life to translating from every language and making that available through print and through editing and through teaching. So I really want to focus on you as a translator. Translation is a big deal, Danuta. Why?
Well, for me, it started as an adventure. Because as you mentioned, I am a biochemist. I have a PhD in biochemistry. And how I came to America. I came for a postdoctoral fellowship. But then I couldn't go back to Poland because of martial law. So when I came that year, 1980, Czesław Miłosz got the Nobel Prize in Literature. Then when I came to Baltimore, because first I was in San Francisco, Wisława Szymborska got a Nobel Prize for her poetry. That was 1996. And I realized that her poems were not available in English translations.
Wow.
My friend of Polish roots, she asked me if I could translate for her a poem. So that was my...
And look what has happened. You have a huge career. Because how many do you believe that you've had translated and presented? I would say hundreds.
Yes, yes.
And so before we go into your career, let's stay with you as a lyrical voice and hear another poem. Danuta Kosciuszko.
This one is from my book, Oblige the Light. The thin blue line between still and alive. In the art gallery, students create moving paintings. They stand or sit by their chosen portrait on the wall. Same pose, same splendid costume. Here a blue sash, a sword, there a yellow rose. At the strike of one, they stare, casually walk away, leaving the background and the still selves. I come alive on the background of a jet plane, pierced with a row of doors, the farthest open on the sandy Mazovian plain with Chopin's weeping willow. My hand reaches through the door, brings out a clover leaf, lilac flower, grain of sand, a walnut from the tree guarding the whitewashed house. I glance ahead and back again. Step by step, I move on.
Oh, that is from your book,
Oblige the Light.
Oblige the Light. That was a winner of a poetry prize, a Clorinda Harris prize.
Yes.
And then you have Face Half Illuminated. They are both published in the United States. Also, you're the author and translator of several books of poems in English and Polish. I'm very interested in your relationship with your mother's poetry. Has she grown as a poet parallel to you, or is she someone you brought along? How does that work? Because I remember reading your book, the book that you put out together, Meadows of Memory, and I think that that's part of your mother's work.
Well, there are four of these books. So the first one, where I actually created kind of a dialogue between my mom and me, It's the Face Half Illuminated. I paired my poems with the translations of my mother's poems. Even though, of course, they were not written that way, but by then I already had two books of hers for which, she published them in Poland, but I did the translations. They were bilingual. So when I came to Face Half Illuminated, which was, by the way, published by the Apprentice House, where the students are doing the different jobs and learning as they go. So this was my goal, to show how two generations across the ocean, different historical backgrounds, converse.
Oh, could you share a little bit of that? And what a tribute to your mother to have braided in your lives together and to make hers well known. She would never have been known in America, ever.
Well, that's one of the reasons we need poetry translations.
Yeah. Yes, will you go with us a bit and share something of you and your mother in dialogue?
Yes, I will read the poem that first in Polish, her poem, then my translation of the poem, and then my response to that poem. So that's from the book Face Half Illuminated, which is the kind of conversation I mentioned. Lidia Osk, Szansa. Do życia jak powietrze, potrzebna mi międzyludzka życzliwość, przestrzeń, barw i zapachy świata. Muszę uciekać przed zgiełkiem, stęchlizną, niszczącą złością. Dopóki jest dokąd wracać, istnieje szansa. A chance. To live, I need, like air, human kindness, space, color and fragrance of the world. I run away from jarring noise, mustiness, damaging anger. As long as there is a place for my return, I have a chance. And now I'll read my kind of response. It's titled Poetry Dialogue, Szansa. I need that, Szansa word of the title of her poem. And I wrote it for that event that was all around the world, Dialogue Among Civilizations. Dialogue among civilizations is on. Names, faces, my face next to the microphone, my mother's name. I'm reading her poem. 1, 2, at the count of 5, the words come. A chance. To live, I need, like air, human kindness.
Mm.
I translate her words, try their English counterparts, for feelings, hues, sounds, move them across the page, across the ocean. In my poems, I go to the USA, Mexico, Sri Lanka, Poland, a girl dancing in a swirl of globes, and tasting her verses and mine, in the tongue she gave me, in the space of a chance. Chance.
A girl dancing in a world of globes? What is that line? A girl dancing.
Yeah, actually, this was a picture. I was in Mexico and on a square, you know, very lazy Sunday, and the kids were playing with, they were blowing bubbles, gum.
And what is that? Read us that line again.
Oh, let me
A
go
girl
back to
dancing
it.
In is it in a world of globes?
A girl dancing in a swirl of
Swirl. There you are, swirling. That is, you know, I just can't say enough about the tenderness that comes through between you and your mother. And she must be so proud that you've dedicated your life to furthering hers. And your lyricism is quite alike, I think. I think your breath control is very much alike and comparative. Now, I want to shift gears for a moment about the Locke Raven Review. That is a time-honored literary journal, and it goes globally. Tell us about that.
Well, I've joined them in 2011 as the poetry translations editor.
Which, of course, they didn't have before.
No. And I said, yes, I'll do it if I can do it my way, meaning I will present in each issue poetry written in a chosen language.
Sounds like a headache. It sounds like a headache. So tell us, I know you've done so many languages, and some of them are extremely obscure. So let's just take the last issue, which I'm familiar with because I just read it. And I think you chose all German poets
yes,
for that.
Yes, I did, yes. And
how did you research that?
It was difficult because, you know, obviously I'm not living there and I'm not knowing what's happening there. So I had to do kind of a detective work. Once I had two poets, it was easier. I, as I say in my introduction to the issue, I found people who I could ask, like one of the poets, I asked her, could you recommend other poets? So then I got a few names. And I also found a website, which I mentioned in the introduction, and a lady there was very trying to help me. So,
how many poets in German were presented, and how many translations of those poems did you present?
Okay, so I present 11 poets, and because of the number, you know, 11 is quite a big number, I decided 2 poems per poet, and I think we have almost that many translators.
So what are some of the other languages you've translated? Because they are little known.
Yeah. For example, I at one point when I was doing my detective's work, I discovered contemporary Mayan.
Mayan, yeah.
And that people actually are writing poems in their language.
Kurdish, Catalan.
Kurdish, yes.
Dutch.
Yeah.
Ukrainian, Arabic. Honestly, you better get a little Nobel for this. But it's a wonderful way to live. And before we hear another poem, tell me, why is it important to preserve a language and then to make it available to everyone else? Why does that matter?
Well, going even back to the Nobel Prize, I mean, most of the poets and writers don't write in English. So we wouldn't know what they are writing and what they got the prize for. That's why we need translators, of course. Like another example, a book I did for my mother's. It came out 2 years ago, and the last year I also organized recordings for the poem. So let me try to say it very fast. It's one poem called
glass mountain in my English translation, Szklana Góra in Polish. So what I did, I got translators from all the continents, almost from three continents, and I have this poem in 21 languages in that one book. And on top of that, each of them, sometimes I could get the original translators, recorded the recording, the translation, recorded their translation. So these people would never know of my mother. They may not even know about Poland, but that poem brought them together.
This is really what it's all about, Danuta. This could heal the world. I mean it. If we could speak, if we could hear each other, it's step number one for unity, yes. I think, just to hear other. Now let us go back to poetry. And what would you like to read for us so that the audience knows who you are?
Maybe this short one from Oblige the Light. Girl in the red coat. The phone rings. I like red phones. I answer. I am wearing a red coat. I am the little girl in my family album. I am little girl in the movie. No, I am almighty. I say, I will send you help right away. Do not get on the train. Do not go through the gate. Do not enter the chamber.
Oh, Danuta, you say so much in that one poem. Wow, where did that come from? What was going on? What were you memorializing? And what a fabulous entry to that thought.
Thank you. Well, growing up in Poland, not that, you know, I was born in 49, so when the war ended 4 years earlier, but the war never ended because all these places commemorate people shot by the Germans. And the memories of any parents, everybody lost family members. Mm. So the war was always around us, even though my parents obviously tried to keep me and my sister happy. And, but hey. Then my mom, of course, in her poems has a lot of about memories from war, and actually the meadows of memory. There are poems going back to or to the war, as well as the prose pieces, because Meadows of Memory are both prose and poetry.
Well, you have continued to serve. I mean, if we are only judged by the deeds we do, then you can rest, because you have been serving very long and hard the art of language and community and unity. So I don't want to lose you as a poet with all of your public service work. So let's go back to a poem.
Wow. So maybe I will do.
I should let them know that you are a photographer as well, a professional photographer. And I believe knowing what to see punctuates your language. That the visual is very present in your poetry, Danuta.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I actually think of photography as poems.
Mm.
Poems in images.
Well, okay, we need a show from you soon of photography, ekphrastic show with your photography and your poetry. But now do it for us in audio.
Darkness of her head, after Gauguin. On the pillow of light lies the darkness of her head, encased in Prussian blue fear. The abundance of her golden flesh stifled under layers of green brown. Alone like this at the mercy of two papas. Move. Abandon the dark layers. Move away from that one. Start a new painting. Paint the mountain in its vibrato ochre. the ocean in broad ultramarine. Mango pears in short strokes on the ground, in bowl. Mango flowers in the long sweeps of hair. Move, like the orchid bloom furled in the green womb, sensing its way. Oblige the light. Till you can feel the spray on the wave crest, the strength of that mountain, the scent of mango, till the stillness feels right.
There is so much motion in your poetry. Are you aware of all the verbs you use? There's so much movement that you are always in motion. I just noticed that as I heard this last poem. Not only the swirling of the former poem, but you're moving, always moving. Are you aware of that? There's something...
To some extent, but when you mentioned it, it's like, oh, wow.
It is so true. And you have produced, been present in many anthologies, and you've been on NPR. You've gone in all directions from English to Polish. And you've also honored Maryland poets very, very highly. I think the best among them, Lucille Clifton, Josephine Jacobson, former poet laureate of the United States, Linda Paston. And you have done this service so that these remain made permanent. Otherwise, they would have vaporized in the air if people didn't have their books on hand. So I think all the work is worth it, Danuta.
Thank you.
What are you on next? What's your next issue going to feature?
I think I'll go to Spanish, which was the very first language I featured in 2011. Except then I had just one poet from Venezuela, and now I want to have a kind of anthology I've been doing recently. So, you know, I'm thinking 10 poets maybe.
Well, let's have another one from Danuta Kosciuszko.
Lucky shows up 70 years later. Poland, February 2002. Oh, Lucky. Good dog. Good doggy. You have been away so many years. You walk your warped tail. Stretch. You want me to follow. Where are we going? Ah, towards the river, across the field, unfurled like a whitened cloth. The dew has fallen. Seems the cows are back in their sheds. It's quiet. I can still smell the milk and the dust stirred by chains, dragged on their way from the meadows. We are coming to the bridge of pine planks. My father nailed thither, but it is gone. Lucky, you are feathery white, like the chicken you snatched when I was a teenage boy in the village, which is no more on the river, that now flows through us to the Milky Way.
I love that one.
Okay.
There you go again, moving, moving, moving across to the bridge of time. And the beautiful thing is you're like the romantic poets from the 19th century, because geographically they always start someplace in a poem and physically move through a meadow or a field or a river to come to another place. And so I think you're very influenced by the romantics. Do you agree?
Oh, yes. You know, growing up in Poland in school at that time, poetry was very prominent. And actually, we memorized pieces from, especially from the great romantic poet Adam Mickiewicz. And also we had all these assemblies and everything. And then I always was reciting poems. So yes, absolutely. Yes, romantic.
Well, you had an education that I envy for America's lack. Please let us have a final poem.
Okay. This one is meant to appear in the next book. Lunch in the Orchard. Sour cherry trees, still handsome in shiny dark leaves, are missing their red fruit. liquid glass that draws deep, deep, like haunted well. Confined in rows, the jealous trees stare at the other side, where sparkling wings blaze, dazed with ripening peaches. Sunflowers, city escapees, glow across the field. Queen Anne's laces float, sun-drunk butterflies hang, raspberries hum and firm up in the heat. Pulsations, vibrations, murmurations, buzz, buzzing bees, now Cicada's roaring love song quiets down, softens. Shy breeze dissolves at our bare feet. Linden trees turn into violins.
The sensuality of Danuta Kaskasiska, where we can smell, taste, and see everything in her poetry. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress on remote. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family and the Sinipet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.